At a time when investors are confronted with market volatility and a variety of challenges fueled by the uncertainty of inflation, unsettled geopolitical tensions, and economic pressures, Luke Guerrero stands ready to take your finance and investment questions and share his unbiased answers. InvestTalk is made possible by KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm serving clients throughout the United States. The clarity for your path forward starts now. Here is KPP Financial Portfolio Manager, Luke Guerrero.
Good afternoon, fellow investors, and welcome back to InvestTalk. I'm Luke Guerrero, and I will be your host today on this beautiful April 10th, 2024, which means we are halfway through the week, and we are a third of the way through the month. And it has, for lack of a better word, been an unexpected month. It's been a lot of news that we've been talking about over the past couple days and couple weeks, and there'll be more that we talk about today. But above all that, the most important part of this show is making you a more informed investor. In order to do that, I need to know what your finance and investment questions are, so we welcome your calls right now or anytime at 888-99-CHART. And with that being said, I will talk about today's market performance and run down the show topics later on, but let's get to our first caller question now.
Hi, this is Raj from New York. I had a question regarding Enphase Energy, ENPH. The stock price has gone up quite a bit compared with other energy stocks. Is there a good reason for that? And what's a good entry point for this? I know it's very expensive. So let us know on the show. Thank you again for all the guidance.
So Enphase Energy, ENPH, is a solar technology company that makes solar panels. For homes, for businesses, they make solar panels as an energy solution. And so let's take a look at how this company has done from a fundamental perspective. Well, they've had some pretty good revenue growth over the past 5 years, averaging 48.5%, but that started to taper off in 2022 and in 2023. Why is that? Money was no longer free. And over the past 5 years, their performance versus the S&P 500 has been pretty good, with the exception of this past year where they're down about 38%. And so Justin and I talk a lot about renewable energy and what drives in a positive direction companies that create, manufacture renewable energy sources. And in order to do that, it's expensive. The input costs are incredibly expensive. So when money is no longer free, like it is now, when interest rates are not effectively zero and capital is more expensive, these companies don't tend to do as well. So let's look at their relative valuation, keeping all of that in mind. And even still, even with a 40% drop off over the past 52 weeks, and year to date, they're down almost 10%, they're still trading at a price to book of about 16.8. which is incredibly expensive. Their forward-looking PD is 31 right now. So for me, in order to justify buying a company that is that expensive, you have to be able to prove to me that that growth is sustainable, which 48% growth year over year certainly is not sustainable, and that it exists in the correct market environment for it to succeed. So for Enphase, for most renewable energy companies as well, I would have to pass. Thanks for the call. Now, we got a lot of ground to cover in the next 40 minutes or so, and here's some of what we have planned, time permitting. Our main focus point concerns a story about an investing roadmap for mid-career accumulators. Workers in their 40s and 50s are generally at their peak earnings level and therefore may have more complex financial needs than their younger counterparts. We'll talk about an investing guide, how to invest in your 40s, and how to invest in your 50s as well. Also, we'll talk a little bit about CPI, the big news today that drove markets. Consumer prices came in hotter than expected. We'll dive into the numbers on a more granular level. Also, we'll talk about how big investors are shifting towards European bonds versus US bonds. And should we have time at the end of the show, we'll talk a little bit about how retail is up to their old shenanigans and taking more and more risky bets as they tend to do in a bull market. We also have some voice bank questions ready to play, including one on IRA rollovers and one on HELFY, HelloFresh, which trades OTC. Now we're going into a short break, and on the other side, we'll talk about today's market activity. Please remember, you can call anytime and leave your questions on the InvestTalk Voice Bank at 888-99-CHART.
In today's world, a variety of factors are affecting the stock markets. Serious investors know building a secure financial future requires hard work and determination. That's why now, more than ever, when it comes to the planning, execution, and maintenance of your portfolio, you need InvestTalk. With total downloads surpassing 50 million, each InvestTalk podcast should be one of your key financial planning and educational tools. InvestTalk is a free download, and hosts Justin Klein and Steve Peasley stand ready to provide their unbiased guidance and professional analysis developed from real-time data research and years of investing experience. 24/7, rain or shine, during smooth sailing or on rough weather days, the InvestTalk listener line is open and waiting for your questions. You set the agenda. Don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a quick look at your financial to-do list. At the top, make that phone call to the InvestTalk Anytime listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Now, before we dive into your questions, let's talk about the market today. U.S. stocks finished lower today, although off of worse levels. They were down over 1%, over 1.3%, I believe, at one point, following this morning's CPI report. Underperformers is a pretty broad category today. Home builders, semis, banks, transport, airlines, expensive industries, all underperformed. Big tech, pretty mixed, with NVIDIA being the bright spot. And frankly, there were very few pockets of positive performance today. And that's all because it was, for lack of a better term, a risk-off day. Hotter CPI prints, which we'll talk about later on, as well as the 10-year Treasury auction, really drove the narrative for trading. Market now pricing in just 2 rate cuts this year, moving further below the 75 basis points that the Fed was projecting in the median dot plot in March. For the Treasury auction, which was for me a more interesting story, there was a $39 billion 10-year auction that came in weaker than expected, adding to the ongoing Treasury supply fears and putting upward pressure on yields that were already being driven by systemically higher rates, the 10-year above 4.5% for the first time since November, and the 2-year near 5% for the first time since November as well. Additionally, the Treasury Department released today a report that showed the U.S. budget deficit, to no one's surprise, is widening to $1.071 trillion in the first half of this fiscal year. So all this, not good news for stocks. Overall, the CPI report really makes it harder to dismiss the hotter reelings that came earlier in the year. Remember, the Fed was saying that it could be seasonal factors that have given a resurgence to inflation. But now, with the most recent data, it seems like that may not be the case. Participants still think that we'll cut this year, maybe at most 2 cuts, down from 7 and 6 earlier than this year, down from 3 about a month ago. But it'll be interesting to note what PPI shows later this week and also what bank earnings shows about that sector and the economy more broadly. Now, as always, if you leave questions on YouTube, we like to get to those because we thank you for watching and commenting on our videos. And so one question today is about MCHP. The question is, what are your thoughts on MCHP? It trades cheaper than most semiconductor names, but still has good growth. So MCHP is a semiconductor name, Microchip Technology Incorporated. And it is true that they do trade a little bit more cheaply than some of these other stocks. But let's look at their fundamentals. So over the past 5 years, their sales growth has been 16%, and it's tapered off a little bit from this year to what they're projecting next year, a slight fall in revenue growth, which is probably mostly just due to input costs. Now, their profitability has been increasing. And not only has their profitability been increasing, as shown by their net margins, but their debt levels are pretty modest and their cash flows are increasing as well. Now, their earnings estimates, it also looks like there have been some upgrades from what I'm seeing here. And overall, it looks like their momentum has been slowing. You see, it's pretty much performed in line over the past 5 years with the S&P 500. Year to date, it's down about 2.32%. You know, overall, to me, judging by their price to earnings, trading at a 30, I wouldn't call it that cheap. It looks like a well-run company. It is capitalized very little by debt, and they have a decent amount of cash flow. Their revenue's growing, has been growing over the past 5 years, and their profitability and their margins have been widening. So for me, it's something I would keep on my watch list, but at a 30 times forward-looking PDE, I would have to pass on that for now. Let's play a caller question right now.
Hello, Steve, Justin, and Luke. This is Paul from Gettysburg calling. I have a question about HelloFresh. I was interested to buy this stock more like for the story, but then the numbers still don't add up for my taste. It has gone down a lot, but I still think in general there might be some future there for the company. So would you guys bet on a stock like HelloFresh? And if at all, what is a good entry price? I'm looking forward to hear the answer on the podcast, and I wish you all a good day. Thank you. Bye-bye.
So HelloFresh, H-E-L-F-Y, for those of you who don't know, is a meal subscription service, right? So it grew a lot during the pandemic because guess what? People were told, don't leave your house. And so a lot of people didn't want to venture outside. They liked these meal kits that were delivered to their homes. And so it grew. You can see the revenue growth. The revenue doubled in 2020 and nearly doubled again in 2021, but then was flat in 2022. And their sales growth has kind of stagnated since the pandemic has happened. And the price has fallen pretty precipitously over the past year, down 70%, I believe down 40% since last month. And that was because they came out with forward-looking guidance that said, listen, guys, revenue's gonna be bad. And the reason they state revenue being bad is because of additional input costs. And so maybe that's the reason, but there could also be other things driving this. From a demand side, people have less money. When people have less money, what's the first thing they cut back on? Unnecessary subscription services. People go back to the grocery store now. So it doesn't serve as much of a need as it did before. If people had more money, maybe they would take these luxuries, but I think the consumer base for these types of products are shrinking. And so I want to take a step back and say, you invested in this for the story. Don't do that. Your intuition told you the numbers don't line up. Listen to your intuition. I would have to pass. Don't buy story stocks. Always trust the fundamentals. Always trust your gut. Thanks for the call. Looks like we got a live call. Dave in Ohio wants to talk about ET. Do you own it? Or are you looking to buy it?
Oh, hi, Luke. Thanks for taking my call. Hey, I have a small position, but I was thinking about adding to it. Your thoughts, and if it's the dividend's sustainable.
Yeah, of course. So for those of you who don't know, ET is a natural gas pipeline transportation transmission services company. And it looks like their revenue growth has kind of tapered off a little bit, but that could be just due to the overall price levels of natural gas. So let's take a look at their debt levels. Their debt level is about $53 billion on a $52 billion market cap, but most of that is pushed pretty far outward to the point where they're not overly leveraged, right? Their interest rate coverage ratio is about 3.11, which means with their earnings before interest and taxes, they can pay their interest expenses about three times over before they would be defunct. And so one thing that draws some alarm is over the past 2 years, they issued quite a bit of shares. But, you know, if you have a highly levered business, which these businesses tend to be, that's not too alarming for them to issue shares. It wasn't too many shares. But their cash flow seems pretty stable, and their profitability seems stable as well. And the relative strength is improving. It's up to about 99 right now. And their valuations, though, seem to be a little overpriced. No, they actually look fine. Their price to book is trading about 1.8. Their average is about 1.3. That means their market cap is 1.8 times what their asset base is. And their price earnings looks pretty modest as well. So for me, given where energy seems to be heading, and given that eventually demand will be picked up as well, I have no problem with this name at all whatsoever. Thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Now, this is InvestTalk, and our 24/7 voice bank never closes. And right now we're moving to a break, so I hope that you call now at 888-99-CHART.
Every investor is working to build a secure financial future. How they get there and when they get there, that depends on many variables. The more you learn about how the market works, the better your chances. So don't forget to call InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, our main focus point today concerns a story about something that's not covered as much, I would say, and that is an investing roadmap for mid-career accumulators. And that's because workers in 40s and their 50s are generally at their peak earnings level and therefore may have more complex financial needs than their younger counterparts. So this is kind of an investing guide to how to invest in your 40s and invest in your 50s, and some tips, tricks, things to keep in mind as you approach, or maybe you're even in that age group right now. So this group often finds themselves at the peak of their earnings power because their careers have progressed, but their financial situation and decisions can be a little bit more complex, as we've said, because they're balancing between saving for themselves and their children's college, their own retirement, family vacations, all sorts of things that may not affect people in their 20s, or maybe even their early 30s, as the age at which people are having children has become older and older. And so it's a pivotal time for those people, for you, to make informed financial decisions. So let's go through these 8 tips, pieces of advice for these mid-career accumulators. The first one is nurture your human capital. What does that mean? That means continue to educate yourselves. Network. Stay informed about the important parts of your sector, of your job, your industry. Because companies come and go. Companies have layoffs. Companies have hiring sprees. And you may want to move on. Any of these things could happen. So in order to maximize your human capital, you need to maximize your knowledge base. Secondly, balance college funding with retirement savings and your other goals. And this is a significant challenge because college is becoming more and more expensive. So how should you prioritize it? Well, sorry to say it for the kids, but prioritize your retirement savings first, because the long-term implications of this and the availability of loans and college scholarships makes it more important for you to worry about your financial future than the immediate cost of your children's college. And you can utilize a bunch of tools to help calculate your income, do financial planning, and a lot of software that can help you clarify what your needs are in that respect. Thirdly, protect what you have. I live in California, which is an incredibly litigious state, and so it's important to have liability policies and insurance policies should some unforeseen things happen. This is the time in which a lot of people have accumulated their assets, and it's important to keep what you have got. Nextly, you want to guard against lifestyle creep. A lot of people get returns on investments, salary increases, and they keep spending more and more and more money. Now, in your 20s and 30s, when you have a lot more time to accumulate for your retirement, that may not be as big a deal. But as you're getting closer to where you're going to start taking that money out towards the end of your 40s, end of your 50s, it's important to realize what type of lifestyle you want and to stick to it without having additional costs creep up. You should also be adding more types of accounts beyond the usual IRAs and 401ks. You can have health savings accounts, taxable brokerage accounts, different types of tools to help you for different things to build wealth beyond these traditional retirement accounts. Mid-career is also a time to start cautiously adjusting your investment risk. We talked about this yesterday when a caller called about a target date retirement fund. And I mentioned that those funds operate in a glide path where you start out with more equities and then slowly and slowly you transition to more fixed income as you get closer to needing to take that money out, because fixed income tends to be safer, tends to be a capital preserver relative to equities. So you should also, in the similar fashion, be thinking about how you should be allocating your portfolio. Another important tip is that more complex isn't better. Just because you have a lot of money doesn't mean you have to do crazy things in your investment accounts. A simple, well-diversified portfolio has been shown to grow and guard your wealth better than a lot of complex strategies. And lastly, you don't have to do this alone. We help our clients with financial planning. We help our clients with their investments. We give them advice on their businesses, on real estate. Plenty of financial professionals do this day after day and can help you. You're not alone. This is a very complex and important part of your life. So if you feel as though you need help, you can reach out to us or somebody else, and we are more than willing to help. For mid-career professionals, it's more of a financial halftime, right? A time to evaluate your progress, adjust your strategies, and ensure you're on track to secure your financial goals and future. And it's challenging, it's balancing, like I said, but with careful planning and strategic decision-making, you can navigate the peak earning years of your life successfully and plan for your and your family's future. Now let's go to Robert in Pleasanton, who has a question about LOAN, which we'll start to talk about before the break, or at least hear your question, and we'll get back to on the other side. How does that sound?
That sounds great. So, yeah, I was just calling about this. Oh, by the way, I don't hear Justin today, so I'm assuming he's probably licking his wounds from the beatdown the Warriors put on the Lakers last
ooh,
night.
Ooh, ooh! I will make sure to send that to him immediately.
Anyway, my question is, yes, regarding LOAN and more generally kind of the mortgage REIT space. I'm just trying to understand how these stocks work, and is there ever a good time? I know like Annaly is one of the largest ones out there, but I don't know if rising rates is good for these or lowering rates is good for these. Is there ever a good time when any of these types of investments are attractive?
It's a complex question, and we'll have an answer for you after the break. We really appreciate your call. Now, on the next Invest Talk, we'll also look into, does the Fed have a real problem on its hands? But after we come back from this break, where we hope to hear from more of you, we will answer that question on LOAN.
At this point, I think almost everyone has heard how generative AI promises to bring us to the next industrial revolution. AI is already shaping society with an impact on daily life that echoes the transformative significance of electricity or the internet. As we take steps to embrace the potential of generative AI, we need to remain vigilant with regard to its exploitability. This is where HackerOne comes in. HackerOne's AI Red Team addresses the novel challenges of AI safety and security for businesses that are launching new AI deployments. The HackerOne approach involves targeted offensive testing by harnessing the collective skills of ethical hackers who are proficient in AI and prompt hacking. In short, AI red teaming is the practice of stress testing AI models and deployments to make sure they can't be tricked into providing information beyond their intended use, and that security flaws can't be exploited to access confidential data or systems. HackerOne seamlessly integrates with your existing tools to enhance communication and collaboration across development, security, and IT teams. So, stay ahead of the game in the battle against cyber threats with HackerOne's Attack Resistance Platform. Learn more at HackerOne.com. That's HackerOne. .com, HackerOne.com.
Everybody wants a secure financial future. That means you'll have finance and investment questions. InvestTalk, 888-99-CHART.
Now, before the break, Robert asked a question. Well, he didn't just ask a question. He also poked a hole in the wound from Justin's Lakers losing last night, which I'll make sure Justin hears. But he also asked a question about LOAN, Manhattan Bridge Capital, and really mortgage REITs more broadly. And so taking a look first at LOAN, it's a really small REIT. It's a small, small REIT. It's got about $60 million in market cap, and it's primarily concentrated in New York. And so its primary income is going to be from these loans for business construction. And for me, in this type of macroeconomic environment, that it, for a business that is specifically concentrated in one city and very small, there's not a lot of margin for error. So on this name, I would probably have to pass. Now, the other question about kind of when is a good time to invest in mortgage REITs? Well, firstly, it's a stable or declining interest rate, right? Because it's more favorable when spreads between the borrowing costs and what they earn widen. The other thing about stability in interest rates is that it denotes generally stability in the economy. If you're loaning money to projects to build buildings, commercial buildings, residential housing, those projects have to be available. If people aren't going into offices, or people can't afford residential property, or there's regulatory scrutiny that prevents zoning, like in where I live in parts of Los Angeles, right? If this company primarily operated on the west side of LA where you can't build buildings, it would probably be a bad investment. So there's a lot that goes into when is a good time to invest in mortgage REITs, but a lot of it, and most of it, like most companies, is macroeconomic dependent. Thanks for the call, and thanks for sticking with us. Now, our first talking point today is about the big news of the day, which was CPI. And so the CPI report, which could have pretty long-reaching effects on the market as a whole, came in hotter than expected. And with consumer prices in March increasing more than expected, financial markets are now adjusting their expectations, not only about how many cuts there are going to be, but when the Fed is going to cut rates, if at all. So a couple weeks ago, the market was about 50-50 on them cutting in the June meeting. Now, when's the first cut expected? September, with at most two cuts this year. So here's a breakdown just beyond the top level of the CPI report. So CPI month over month, 0.4% rise for March, making the third consecutive month of strong consumer price readings. The main driver, gasoline, which rose 1.7%, and shelter, rents, which also rose 0.4%, increases pretty consistent with what we saw in February as well. Notably, these two categories accounted for more than half of CPI's overall increase. Food price rise, a little bit more modest, only about 0.1%. And over the past 12 months, CPI has climbed by 3.5%. which is its highest increase since all the way back in September. Looking at core, which excludes volatile and energy components, there was also a 40 basis point increase in March. Not all bad news. We saw a decline in prices for used cars and trucks, recreation, and new vehicles. So what does this mean? Well, for quite some time, we've said that we are in a new environment where inflation will be secularly higher. And we talked about some of those drivers. Jamie Dimon talked about some of those drivers in a shareholder letter that we discussed at the end of the show yesterday, that put some perspective on what could be driving these things. And so with more and more data piling on, you recall that the Fed was saying earlier in the year, maybe this is just seasonal. But now being into March, being into April really, and seeing the March reports, it's becoming more and more clear that in order to be educated and disciplined investors, we have to live in a world that is and not in a world that we want it to be. We would love to be able to buy homes with 3% mortgages, but in the horizon, that doesn't seem very likely. So you have to keep in mind that rates, inflation, are likely to be higher than they were over the past decade in the coming months, in the coming years. Now let's go ahead and play another caller question that came in earlier to 888-99-CHART.
Hi, guys. I have a question regarding IRA. So I currently have a Vanguard Target Retirement 2045. What are your thoughts on, I don't know if the correct term is rolling it over, but for lack of a better term, rolling it over to a TD Ameritrade traditional IRA? I do not participate in an employer-sponsored 401k. The traditional IRA, I'm leaning toward that for the reason that I can contribute, I believe, $6,000 and lower my taxable income. My current IRA, not doing a whole lot. I'm not active with it. Just wanted your opinion. Thank you.
So let's dissect this a little bit. It's a little bit of a confusing question, but let's start with the target date fund. So I talked about target date funds today. I talked about them yesterday, and they create that glide path for you. They do the work for you. They're generally diversified funds. Vanguard is going to be diversified and low cost. It's going to start with a higher allocation towards equities, lower to fixed income, and eventually switch those, flip those, more fixed income, fewer equities, as you need to keep the capital as you start to take it out into retirement. So rollover isn't exactly the right term here. It sounds to me like you want to more actively use your IRA, which given that you don't have an employer-sponsored plan, I absolutely agree with, because you do have those benefits of lowering your taxable income, right? You do have those benefits of those tax those specific accounts towards your earnings for that year. So there's nothing wrong about contributing more to your IRA. I think you may be a little bit confused about the terminology, which is fine. I'm not sure where your target date fund is held right now. But overall, we are always going to be in favor of more and more savings. Thanks for the call. Now let's shift over to another thing I wanted to discuss, which is that big investors are pivoting from U.S. treasuries to European government bonds. And this strategic shift is really about inflation seeming to cool in Europe as growth is cooling as well. And what that could mean about the European Central Bank initiating interest rate cuts sooner than the U.S. And so these big players, which are household names, PIMCO, JP Morgan, T. Rowe Price, have really ramped up their investment in European government debt in recent weeks. And this move is pretty significant because it tells us not just what the backward-looking data like CPI shows us, but what market participants and how they're digesting the news as it comes in. So what the market is saying with this type of move is that the European Central Bank could execute more rate cuts this year compared to the Fed, with the European Central Bank expected to cut 3 to 4 times by year end, in contrast to now people expecting the Fed only cutting 2 times at most, or maybe not at all. And, you know, you've seen it both in US and European government bonds. You've seen a sell-off really that's led to an increase in yields as investors have adjusted their rate cut expectations. But this adjustment has been more pronounced within treasury yields. They've risen to 4.4% compared to Germany's Bund yield, which has increased only to 2.4%. And so this is really showing clearer evidence of an inflation correction in Europe. And why is that? Well, the ECB estimates a 2.3% annualized inflation rate in the Eurozone by 2024, but their growth is only 0.6%. In contrast, the Fed, before CPI came out, anticipated a 2.6% rate of inflation, but growth at 2.8%. Growth at 2.1% by year end. So all this really just shows further evidence outside of the economic data, which is just as important as the economic data, which is how are all these market participants digesting this information? How are they placing bets? How are they interpreting it? Because if we look at how these big players are interpreting data, it can help inform our own investment decisions. Now let's slip in another InvestTalk listener question now from 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Stephen, Justin. My name is Sherry from New York, and I was calling to ask about ticker symbol TECK, T-E-C-K, and I wanted to get your opinion on this. I have a small position in it, and maybe your opinion on the overall sector that TECK is in. Look forward to hearing your answer on the podcast, and thank you so much.
So TECK is TECH Resources Limited, and they are an exploration, acquisition, development, and production company that primarily operates in three business segments: steelmaking coal, which is 57% of the revenue, copper, which is 23% of the revenue, and zinc, which is 20% of the revenue. From a fundamental perspective, sales growth has been about where you'd expect it to be, given that it's primarily going to be predicated upon how the underlying commodities are doing. So you saw a little bit of a fall off from 2022 into 2023, but revenue is supposed to grow this year. Looking at their profit margins, return on equity, it's been falling, and it's going to fall again this year. Their input costs are becoming a little bit more expensive, and they're capitalized with quite a bit of debt, $8.4 billion on a $25 billion market cap, but a lot of that debt is pushed outward such that their interest rate coverage ratio stands at about a 4. And over the past couple months, there's been quite a run-up from about 40 to 46, and their relative strength has improved. And so even though their profitability has fallen off a little bit and their cash flow has fallen off a little bit as well, this is what happens with companies that are, their revenue is predicated upon, and their input costs really, these commodities. So let's take a look at how it's priced. Price to book sitting at a 1.3. The industry average is a 1. Not too bad. It's price to earnings forward looking is about a 16. It's not low, but it's also not overly expensive. Listen, we think and have been investing for our clients in a way that is allocating more towards material resources, energy, industrials. I have no problem with this name specifically, and we certainly are overweighting the sector for ourselves. Thanks for the call. Now let's keep it moving and play two in a row from the InvestTalk listener voice bank.
currently about 8% of my portfolio is in energy, in oil companies, basically. It's about evenly distributed between Devon, DVN, Valero, VLO, and Occidental Petroleum, OXY. My question is, do you think I'd be wise to trim a little bit of that 8% down? If so, from which would you do it? Thank you very much, and looking forward to your response. Thank you. Bye-bye.
So the high-level question here is about, is 8% too much in energy? And the short answer to that is no. When I like to think about taking deviations from the market in terms of over and underweights, I like to bind myself to a difference relative to the overall market. So here's the Russell 3000 ETF, the iShares Russell 3000 ETF. Let's take a look how they're invested in energy. About 3.76%. So to me, does 8%, given we like energy, you certainly like energy, we think energy is going to perform well, it's been performing well over the past month or so, is 8% egregiously overweight? No, it's 5% overweight. I think that's perfectly fine. I don't think there's any reason for you to trim. Maybe you want to diversify into some other names. Maybe you want to buy a more broad ETF. That would be fine as well if you just don't want to be concentrated in three energy names. But I don't think 8%, given where the market is at 3, is a crazy overweight to energy. Thanks for the call. Now, lastly, our last talking point for today is a fun one. And that is about retail traders. And retail traders are making a pretty strong comeback. And a lot of that is driven by big tech. A lot of people buying a lot of call options on NVIDIA. And that gamma squeeze driving the price even higher, leading to even more speculative bets, as well as speculative bets on easing of monetary policy, which may or may not have been blown out this morning, but here we are. And so they're shifting away from this recovery mode towards how they tend to act broadly. Again, this may not be you, but this is retail in general, in bull markets. So the first place that they're putting their money, which is a little worrisome, is triple leveraged ETFs, which have been making a comeback. QQQs, triple leveraged. Now, we have told you before, Justin and I, and we'll continue to tell you, that these types of vehicles are not investment vehicles. They are trading vehicles. A lot of people use them for hedging, but they're short-term trading vehicles. So if you are trying to potentially lose a lot of money, then become a long-term investor in these vehicles. But if you hear a lot about triple leverage ETFs, or really any highly levered ETFs, note that they're not for investing. They are for trading. There's also still a strong retail inclination to be overweight to technology stocks, and primarily AI stocks, NVIDIA, AMD, Taiwan Semiconductor. And these sectors are viewed as the forefront of innovation, which they are, but there's also an inherent risk to being highly concentrated, especially in names that can be incredibly volatile. And so all of this is really reminiscent for me of the 2021 meme stock mania. And keeping that in mind, fresh capital in US stocks has increased by 52% in the quarter, reaching a peak not seen since early 2022. And overall, this behavior has really wiped out a lot of losses that came out of the bear market run that started in 2022, with retail portfolios reaching a new high. And the resurgence of a broader market optimism has, like I said, caused people to take on additional risks, where if volatility were to start to trend upward again persistently, these risks into leveraged ETFs and speculative investments could blow out a lot of retail investments. So, you know, retail investors, or really retail traders, is what we're talking about. Their appetite for risk is growing, underpinned by technological advances, market conditions. And while promising for some people's individual portfolios, it's an important sign to watch. Because when people are willing to throw their money around into what Justin calls the Ponzi economy more and more, that's when you know that maybe for yourself, it's time to pare back a little bit. Now, this is InvestTalk, and I'm Luke Guerrero, and we have one goal here, and that is to help you achieve your financial freedom. And to that end, our work continues after this break, so get your caller questions in now at 888-99-CHART.
Let's take a quick look at your financial to-do list. At the top, make that phone call to the InvestTalk Anytime listener line, 888-99-CHART.
Hi, Steve and Justin. I'm looking at the ETF XLI to try to get into some of the industrials. Is this an okay time to get into it? Is there a price that I should be looking at or waiting for to take a position in this to try to get some exposure? Also, is XLI something you would think is a good choice right now? I know, Justin, you'll probably tell us that you'd prefer some individual funds over this, but for those of us that maybe aren't knowledgeable enough to intelligently pick some individual funds in the industrial sector, would this be a good way to get some exposure? Thank you.
So XLI is a S&P 500 industrials fund. And because it's an S&P 500 industrials fund, it's going to limit its exposure to mid and small caps because the S&P 500 is primarily a large cap index. 97% of this fund is in large caps. It's also going to be a US only fund. This is a breakdown by revenue for those of you that are watching on YouTube, but these names are going to be US names. And it's going to be pretty well spread out. Machine manufacturing at 20%, aerospace and defense at 21%. And, you know, overall, these funds are fine vehicles. They're passive funds. I have no problem with sector-specific passive funds. Again, if you're looking more at an asset class like small caps, small value, mid-cap value, stuff like that, I'm more inclined to go look for lower-cost active funds. And that's because when you have that type of broad diversification, you want to take those active tilts. And as long as you're not paying too much for it, that's fine. So looking at the expense ratio here, 9 basis points, that's because it's a passively managed fund, right? They're going to rebalance probably quarterly when the S&P 500 rebalances quarterly. So from a cost perspective, it's not that expensive. But I do think there are better funds out there. I think you should probably go looking for a fund that has more mid and small cap exposure because we know historically and empirically, even though the past couple of years, large cap tech has done really well, we know that historically, investors have a higher expected return from investing in small and mid-cap companies because the cost of capital is higher and the demand for investing that capital is higher as well. So if you're looking to get invested in a broad-based ETF like XLI, maybe hunt around for something that has more of a balanced or at least market-neutral exposure to small and mid-cap so that you can really benefit from the general higher expected returns of those securities. But I like where your head is. Thanks for the call. Now let's fit in one more question, this one coming from YouTube, and that is asking about TTC, which is Toro Company. And this person, Tyler Adams, knows it's been beaten down for a while, but still likes the diversity of the business. Would I buy at these levels? Well, just because a business has been beaten down in the short term doesn't necessarily mean that it is a bad investment. So let's take a look. Sales revenue growth over the past 5 years, 11%, looks pretty steady. Looks like it fell off a little bit. This company is an outdoor environment, including turf and landscaping maintenance company, snow and ice management, underground utility construction as well. And so the reason why this has probably fallen off is because residential property is 19% of their total revenue. And a lot of people redesigned their homes during the pandemic when that was where they were spending most of their lives. Remodel is the word I'm looking for. And because people did that, they don't typically remodel your homes all the time. And people also had a lot more income, a lot more disposable income from not traveling as they tend to do now. And also because things were a lot cheaper. The general overall price level was cheaper. And so, you know, from a relative valuation perspective, this company, it's not egregiously overvalued. It's trading at about a 5.9 price to book relative to the industry average of 1.3. Its price to earnings is about 20, which is pretty expensive. Its debt levels are fine. It's got $1 billion of debt on a $9 billion market cap company, but the profitability and cash flow is falling, and that's because of the overall macroeconomic environment. So, you know, the fundamentals are okay, but I just don't think the macroeconomic picture, it makes this the right time to invest in this company. Thanks for the comment. Now, I'm Luke Guerrero, and this completes another episode of Invest Talk. We thank you for listening, and we encourage you to tell your friends and your family members about our free podcast downloads. Get yours anytime at iTunes, Google Play, and Spotify. Spotify, rather. And guess what? We're on YouTube now, so feel free to come and watch and look at all the charts and all the data that we're looking at when we answer your finance and investment questions. Independent thinking, shared success. This is Invest Talk. See you tomorrow.
InvestTalk is a trademark of KPP Financial. Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for the listener to understand that not all comments made will apply to them. Specifically, nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell security. Because such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor firm, which retains all rights. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. Steve Peasley is president, and Justin Klein is chief executive officer of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial. Thank you for listening, and your comments and questions are welcome on our 24-hour listener line at 888-99-CHART.